Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of the world's best-selling sales book, The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we're here today on Sell or Die to make sure that you get the information that you need in order to make more sales, more money, keep your job, fire your boss, and take over the company.
That's right. This show is all about you and how we can help you. And all you need to do is find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Tell both your friends.
And then give us a 5-star review.
Okay. And today's show is all about how you can improve your life. I want to make sure that you get that. Because when we start to talk about what happens in the sales world, we mean it.
Oh, yeah. So let's get into it.
It's time to sell or die.
Randall Kenneth Jones is a self-described professional storyteller, author, and speaker. He's been featured on The Today Show, The Hoda Show, and Marketplace on Public Radio. He's the author of the book, Show Me, Celebrities, Business Tycoons, Rock Stars, Journalists, Humanitarians, Attack Bunnies, and more. Let's welcome in Randall Kenneth Jones.
Attack Bunnies, that's like a...
I love that.
Yeah, I know. Not many people
and there's a story. There's a story.
Oh, tell us.
Did it multiply?
You really want to... We're going to jump right into the bunny
Go
story?
Go for it.
We're dying to know.
I'm going to give you the short one because I actually like people to get the book to read the full one. I write about workplace. I've been writing about workplace issues, and I went all the way back into my past. And at one point in time, I was at work. I was naked, and I was attacked by a bunny.
Oh, wow.
That's the teaser.
Whoa.
That's the story.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And
did the bunny survive?
It was a pretty big brawl. You'd be surprised how evenly matched though a fight is between a human being and a really angry rabbit.
I don't want to get into it too deeply, but you know how those rabbits like to multiply. It wasn't a sensual thing, was it? It was just
normal. The bunny wasn't coming on to me. The bunny was actually trying to tear my foot off.
Aha!
Oh.
Well, there you go. Okay, so let's hop into another story.
Yeah, let's start with your book.
Tell me what caused the book. Tell me about your book.
Well, I moved to Naples, Florida in 2009, and you're probably familiar with the area. We, as a community, there's so many highly successful people here that live here full-time or part-time, mm-hmm. and I want to learn. I mean, I think I was pushing 50. I wanted to learn. I came down here and realized, how am I going to meet these people and be educated? And so I went to the local newspaper and I said, hey, is anybody talking to these people and writing about it? And they said, no, do you want to do it? And
That's cool.
Yeah. I said, yes, absolutely. And I did it. I mean, I did it alone. I did all the pitches myself. I managed everything. I wrote the column. And from 2012 to 2016, I interviewed over 100 people.
Way to go.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Well, what was really shocking to me, and you've seen the book, is who said yes. Because, and I get in a lot of trouble for saying I'm a nobody because people are like, oh you're not
come
a nobody.
On.
Well, but I was a nobody.
Who said no? Who said no?
Oh, you know, a lot of people said no, but I'll tell you the no that I respect the most, even though I still want it so bad, is David McCullough.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, you know, you get... He's probably too busy, policing his Pulitzer Prizes. But no, I mean, to get to that point in your career, you kind of get to say no. If some guy comes along, you get to say no. And my whole entire interview plan for David McCullough, I mean, was simply to ask him, what can history teach us about being better people at work and at home? And that was the one question. I was going to shut up and just take it all in.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not get that opportunity. So, and you know, and as you know, a lot of times the no comes from somebody that has, that's working for them.
You know,
so the person you're trying to get doesn't even know about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As an interviewer or as a story writer, your key is to ask the provoking question or the emotional question, correct?
Right.
And I always find it interesting that some of the worst questioners, like Barbara Walters or Larry King, have the most prominent positions. They never ask the deep question. They're always superficial at best. And amazingly, the guys like you that are out there asking those deep questions can actually teach salespeople how to ask a question better. How did you learn questioning?
I've been inquisitive my entire life. If you my poor parents, yeah, in Missouri. If you actually, my dad is 86, and every now and then he's like, Randy, you know, I really got to go. Love hearing from you, but you know, this phone call's got to end. So I,
that's funny.
I've always been that way. And I think when you really go through the process. I was pretty freaked out. There were times where I was pretty starstruck going, really? I'm talking to Shirley Jones? I mean, I'm freaking out.
I love Shirley Jones, by the way.
Just,
I know.
Well, and she'll say she's very candid and very open. But, you know, the other thing is just ask the question. If you're listening, and this applies to sales, if you're listening and paying attention, simply ask the next question you want to ask. I mean, you have to represent your listener or your reader. But I just followed the path pretty naturally. If the next question popped into my head, I went off script and I asked it.
I would have asked Shirley Jones about the Music Man. Mm. That was just a brilliant, brilliant part of hers.
I did ask Shirley Jones about the Music Man.
And?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the Mary and the Librarian, I'm an actor, so the Mary and the Librarian, and she took pictures. We kind of posed. I said, can we pose like classic Shirley Jones film pictures? And she did it. She like posed, cool. And I pretended to be Robert Preston on the footbridge, and she was Mary, and then I was Curly, and she was Lori, and the people were so, it was pretty, I was freaking out. And Shirley Jones is, I think, 82 or 83 now. Uh-huh. This happened a couple of years ago. Breathtakingly beautiful. Wow. Are just incredible, and I hope she knows that. Just an extraordinarily beautiful woman.
You've gotten some very famous people to be interviewed, in your book: Pat Benatar, Susie Orman, Vanessa Williams. How did you get them to say yes? Because that in itself is a sale. So, you said you did this all yourself. You reached out on your own. What did you do to even get in touch with them and then get them to say yes to the interview?
Well, patience is a virtue. Being nice works. Being patient.
We're out of that.
And, trying to actually give a valid pitch that was unique, because really what I was trying to do was different. I went into it saying very candidly, I'm looking for the best in people. I talked to the judges from TV's Hot Bench. And they laughed when I said, I said, if we unearth a smoking gun in this interview, I'll help you hide it, because that's just not what I'm about. I'm not looking for that. It helped me a lot that there was a gentleman named Phil Buth, who was the former president of Good Morning America, who took me under his wing very early in the process. And I did an interview with him. Through him, I met Regis Philbin, Tyler Matheson, you start dropping the right names, yeah, and that helps tremendously, both of whom have been incredibly supportive and incredibly good to me. But I met another gentleman named Jack McKinney, a former head coach for the LA Lakers. And he was actually Magic Johnson's first professional basketball coach. So Magic called me back. Bill Walton called me back. So within a couple months, I was actually able to drop some names and get some work. Now, a lot of people said no, but truth be told, their publicists typically said no. I don't know whether they necessarily even heard about the pitch.
Did you tell them it was for a book, or did you tell them it was just for the newspaper article?
I did both, because I knew all along I wanted to write a book. And gotcha. So I made sure I owned the intellectual property.
Right.
Did you have to follow up multiple times with those people who said yes, or did they... Did you just hear back right away? How did that work?
No, they said yes. Once they said yes, we scheduled it. And I was asked, Doug Zandler asked me, he said, how many people blew you off? And I went, zero. Wow. Every single person showed up. For the most part, they were in person, because they were people that either lived in Naples or were traveling through. And occasionally I would do a phone, like Susie Orman. I met over the phone first, because they wanted the column to run in the paper in advance of the event she was at. But then I would meet them at the event. So for the most part, they all showed up.
That's amazing.
How many people, this is an interesting part of the process. A lot of these personas that you talk to have a persona. And I wonder if you're able to get them out of character into themselves.
I believe I did, because I think I was pretty unassuming. I think, once again, it's going back to that just ask the question.
Yeah, you're not looking for the dirt. You're just looking for the
human. I'm not looking for the dirt. Yeah. But I tell you, and if you've seen the other thing about the book, is one of my biggest cheerleaders is Aaron Brockovich, and who is a friend and so incredibly dear to me to this day. I will share that during Hurricane Irma, Aaron Brockovich checked in on me every single day.
Wow.
Via text or through Facebook.
Wow.
That's cool.
That's amazing.
But, you know, as far as a role model of somebody who knows how to be authentic and get people to warm up to her and tell her things, but also knows how to kick ass when necessary, I can't beat it. She is a godsend to me in every conceivable way and continues to be.
That's cool.
She's everything, people. If you've seen the movie, she's everything you want her to be. She's everything. If people who love the movie, she's everything and more.
I think it's interesting that when you meet someone who has celebrity status, you're either enthralled or disappointed.
Yeah.
In terms of who they really turn out to be when you're face to face and talk to them. I've had a lot of opportunities to talk to people, and I really feel privileged that I got to know them as human beings, some for the good, some for the bad, but all for the lesson. I'm sure you got a ton of lessons from your interviews.
Well, that was the goal. I went into it looking for something I could share because, you know, I'm 55 now, but, you know, I still wanted to learn. And I'm trying to really build a platform on lifetime education. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to learn. But yeah, I mean, you have to, as you know, doing this, you have to listen carefully, be an active listener, because you've got to really that lesson, you'll find that little thread in something somebody said and you go, wow, there's the path. That's what I'm going to follow. Because none of us also, you know, as now I joined the Nice Guys on business. I've got my own show is part of Nice Guys. And so now I'm doing this as a podcast and you want to find that thread and pull on it. But you don't want to do the same interview everybody else does.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, you know Aesop, right? The fable guy?
Yeah, the fable guy. Heard him. Yeah. Haven't interviewed him yet, but if you've got a connection, I'm all over it.
I do have a connection. I'll send you a copy of the book.
Thank you. I hear it's quite good.
It's not autographed. But but the one of the when we first started talking, it said that reminds me of a story and why it pisses me off, is that they would make a point and then tell the story. Aesop tells the story and then makes the point. That was the whole process. The moral of the story is, and so you get a lesson from each one of these things, and that's why you read the story all the way through. You want to see what the point is. It's sort of a hook. If you already know the point, the story is almost superfluous.
So you know, but all I was going to say to that is all I worry about is attention span now. I mean, if the classical, tell them what you're going to tell them what you told them.
Please don't say that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, the challenge we all have is attention span.
Yeah.
Get the attention span. I would much prefer as a storyteller to let it unveil itself.
Of course.
Present itself in a natural way. But man, sometimes it demands that you give them at least a few more teasers to get them to even take the time to read it.
I grew up a big fan of short stories and reading short stories because I wanted to see that, you know, that ultimate twist at the end or the ultimate moral thing coming through. And I didn't want to see it at the beginning. I want to see it at the very end. And I read all of Aesop's fables because I wanted to see the moral.
Yeah.
So what were some of the best stories and morals that you learned through your interviews?
One of my favorite stories, I love it when things go full circle. And let's not forget that speaking with Jeffrey today is a significant full circle for me, which we want to get into, even though it might embarrass him a tad. I'm not all that concerned about that.
All right. Well, I embarrass easily, so
I'm in pretty good shape. Met Pat Benatar in 1982.
Yep.
I was doing singing telegrams in college as a job. I wanted to meet my hero. I'm in mid-Missouri. This is pre-internet. I mean, when you're just not going to meet anyone famous when you're in Columbia, Missouri. In the 80s, it's not going to happen.
You never know. Should I be singing Hit Me With Your Best Shot in the middle of this as your sort of background?
You betcha that's where we're going with
okay,
this.
Go so ahead. Go.
I invent a fan club that didn't exist.
Oh, my gosh.
I called the Missouri Student Association, pitched the idea. They approved it. We showed up. I was dressed as Prince Charming. I had 6 dozen balloons. I had rewritten new lyrics to Hit Me With Your Best Shot. I'm 20 years old. Go backstage. She was so polite, pleasant, appreciative, delightful, that she completely changed my life. Because I'm 20 years old, I meet one of my heroes, mm-hmm. and she's good to me.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah,
33 years later, I sat across from her backstage before a concert in Naples, and she remembered me.
Oh, cool.
Wow. Well, when you show up with 6,000 balloons.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, someone had to blow all those up.
Yeah, and someone had to poke them.
You know, but what she said that really blew me away, she goes, Randy, I don't just remember the telegram, I remember you.
Oh, yeah.
And that's cool.
To be able to go to somebody 33 years later and say thank you, I think is a gift.
Yeah,
I think it's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing, and I say this every chance I get, if you have a teacher or a mentor or somebody who influenced you, they might not even know it. But the way we are wired and connected right now, it's too easy to find that person. If everybody listening would find that one former teacher or mentor and reach out and say thank you and acknowledge them, you have the potential to change their life in ways that you might not even know.
Yeah.
And Tommy Toon, actually, Broadway director, choreographer Tommy Toon, he jumped on that bandwagon with me. He was the one who was like, no, Randy, we're going to talk about teachers. I don't want to talk about me. And his entire interview was everything celebrating teachers and mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's funny. My little daughter, Gabrielle, goes to a private school. And three of her teachers so far have been life changers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told them right to their faces. I mean, I let them know what an impact they've made, not just on our child, but on me as a person.
Yeah.
And how impressed I was at their dedication and their capability of transferring their messages.
Well, I tell you, my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Patsy Watt.
There you go.
Of Columbia, Missouri.
There you go.
Read my first book. And said, I've stayed in touch with her. She's only like 13 years older than me, so she's not that much older than me, but called me and said, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but it's not good enough.
Whoa.
No. She was right. And I knew it. And everybody else was blowing smoke. There was not enough focus on the reader. There was too much about me. I knew she was right. To this day, I have a benchmark for Facebook. If I don't want Patsy Watt to read it, I don't post it.
That's cool.
Now, I'm not saying that she's a prude in any way, shape, or form, but she is my benchmark. But for her as an educator to meet me at 10 or 11 or 12, and then years later go, don't want to hurt your feelings, this isn't ready, but you know what happened? I kept the best of it, and it is now in my current book. And my current book has a lot more power than the book that I had written previously.
Yeah, when you get a feedback from your publisher or someone who's reading your book, it can be hurtful, but you either take it as inspiration or you get pissed off about it. And I can remember finishing the sales Bible and turning it in. I was all proud and everything. And Adrian Zakheim, the great Adrian Zakheim, calls me on the phone and goes, the opening's weak. Like, what do you mean the opening's weak? I'm a writer. I'm like the king of writing. The opening's weak. He said, no, your opening is great if it's at the back of the book.
Ooh.
So I put the opening at the back of the book and I rewrote the opening and it won. That's the sales Bible. Still on sale since 1994.
But that's being open to feedback, you know?
Pardon? Oh, yeah. If you're a writer and you get offended by what happens, obviously you stand on ceremony, correct? I mean, Randy, you're in a position where somebody pisses you off about it, don't you push back a little bit?
Well, you know, it's strengthened. Either it's going to teach you something if you're open to what they have to say. You can't please everything is subjective no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Or the thing I like is when it strengthens your resolve. When mm-hmm. somebody gives you negative feedback and you're like, no, I'm always going to think about it. But wait a minute. No, I agree. I think what I did was right. But then I usually find there's a little bit something missing. and what my original goal was.
Yeah.
And I can usually tweak a line or two in order to strengthen my goal. But yeah, it's I don't always do what people tell me to do, but I think you have
to. No, but it makes you reread it.
It depends on how much you trust the person.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a story that might be embarrassing to Jeffrey, and I need to know what it is.
This is going to look like a total setup. And it's not a total setup. It's going to like, we found this guy because he's going to be the ultimate ground noser on the show. I would never have written a word had I not read Jeffrey Gettemer's work 20-something years ago.
Wow.
I would not be who I am today. I would not have the career I've had. Nothing. It would never have happened. Because what you taught me when I was going through, you know, teal, brown, green, fuchsia, all of the color spectrum.
Gotcha.
I am waiting for the fuchsia book. So
he'll make one just for you.
Yeah.
He taught me that you could write about business and be entertaining. And everything I had read from a business perspective was a snooze fest up to that point in time. And this guy is writing things like, and I'm paraphrasing, like, if you can't get past the gatekeeper, you suck. And the first time I'm reading You Suck, I'm like, when he wrote You Suck in that book, I devoured them. To this day, if I actually take personal time to watch TV, I feel guilty.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I'm like, you know, it looms over me. And I started very small because I didn't train to be a writer. And Hoda asked me, I was on the Hoda Kotb show on Sirius XM. And she said, did you always do this? I went, oh, no, Hoda. I think if you asked my English teachers back in school, they'd be going, Randy wrote a book. the creative element was there. But I started doing some newsletters and things grew and grew and grew. But I discovered that entertainment could go hand in hand with messaging. And sir, that is because of you.
Amazing.
You're very humble.
Now it gets a little more. I don't know how much you this remember. Then I had sent you a letter like 10, 15 years ago. And in the back, I think of the sales Bible, you had said, I want you to tell 10 people about this book.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you a letter and I did that page and I said, I can't promise you that you're going to have an uptick in sales from Newport News, Virginia, but I just told 83 students at Christopher Newport University. So I think I've done my part times eight.
You certainly had.
And then you were chatting about, you'd said something in the book about the importance of your collateral. And I thought, you know what? My company name is MindZoo. I said, I'm going to give you the acid test. I sent you my media kit. And at the time I had MindZoo stuffed animals. And your daughter was on her way and you wrote me back. You sent me, and I framed it in my office. You sent me a note back and you told me that you put the stuffed animal in the crib waiting for her birth.
I did.
We watched to find out when she was born and I sent a companion animal back down to you. And then when I started this whole, let's try to be nice initiative, you got on the phone with me and you didn't have to do this. And what you said to me, she goes, Randy, what you're really talking about, what you stand for is the importance of importance. And you said, steal that line and use it. And I still do.
Cool.
So I'm not really trying to be the biggest brown noser on the planet.
You may win an award.
You're top 10.
No, you know, but you know what? This is, if you want an illustration of what I'm talking about to let somebody know what they meant to you, whether it's Pat Benatar or Jeffrey Gettemer, this is it.
Thank you.
I would not be who I am today without you, period. There is absolutely no question in my mind.
Okay, so I think we should probably end it there.
Now, you have mail. The check is in the mail. Is that right?
Yeah, the check is in the mail. That's true. I'm obviously flattered and obviously humbled, but that's part of my intention. When I write, I write to transfer the message, and I write to make sure that other people can get it. I've gotten a ton of emails over my career saying, you know, when I read your stuff, I look behind me to see if you're standing there because it sounds just like you're talking to me. And there's a secret, and the secret is I write like I talk. And I'm sure in these interviews that you've given that you've had the same kind of situation, it has to be conversational or it's not going to work.
Well, and that applies to every single person listening to this show. I mean, this is not exclusive to you and I who interview people. If you're not going to ask the right questions and follow the path and be authentic and listen to what you hear and try to interpret what that means, there's that applies to everyone listening. That conversation, you know what, guys, conversation isn't dead. And I believe technology has done wonderful things, and I think it's done horrible things to communication. And nothing's going to beat the handshake. Nothing's going to beat looking somebody in the eye. Nothing's going to beat a conversation, because if you like each other, the chances of you working together is so much higher. And you can't like a text. You just can't do it.
Well, texting has ruined grammar as we know it.
But, oh, yeah.
But I
and
think
full words.
I think that beyond that, the human interaction shows the emotion. And one of the reasons that people get upset about one another at texting is it doesn't show where the emphasis is. It doesn't show where you're, you know, are you insulting me or are you praising me?
Well, that's email. Email is really problematic with that, because that's even more words that have no emotion attached to them. And I am, call it corny, but man, I'll use the smiley face if I have to make sure that somebody.
It's not that corny. Yeah. So are you continuing to interview?
Yeah, no, actually, I joined the Nice Guys on Business podcast and have had a few. Bob Orr from CBS News, he was somebody that I just featured. He's a friend of mine. He's here. Tanya Acker from Hot Bench, she is coming up this Friday. And then Doug and Strick spun me off. I'm a spinoff. So starting in January, they're going from 5 to 6 days a week.
Whoa.
And my Show Me More. And it's going to be just me on Saturdays. And it's kind of an opportunity for me to go back to people I already know and I've already chatted with, and then also meet new people. And it's what, I mean, truly, it's just such a blessing, because I will tell you, you listed some of the names of the people who talked to me.
Yeah.
I'm completely shocked. People heard me and Hoda on the radio and they were like, wow, you sound like, you know, your best friends. And I said, well, truth be told, everybody Hoda talks to thinks they're her best friend. She's that special. But, you know, I do know her at this point in time. Peggy Post from the Emily Post Institute has been such a supporter, such a vocal supporter. She wrote the foreword for the book, you know, and but it's amazing to me when I actually talk about her when I'm a speaker and go out and tell these stories and go in front of groups. I usually tell the stories about how many things I've screwed up in front of Peggy. I mean, if there's something, a mistake to make in front of the nation's manners maven, man, I have made it.
I have a couple of ideas for you, but I'm sure you have another book going, right?
Right now, I don't. Right now, I'm really focused more on the podcast interviews. This book has only came out a year ago.
So I'm going to give you the next title of your book.
Okay.
And you can take it for what it's worth.
Well, so far, everything you've told me to do, I've done. So, man, this better be good.
The book is titled From One Side of Naples to the Other. Because all the people that you're talking to are in that 5 square mile area, whatever, whatever the size of it is.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable. You have this cast of characters that are there that are incredible.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And what was interesting, too, is all these people don't live here, but they had that was really one of the points I wanted to make with the book at the end. Every single person was here full-time, part-time, passed through, performed here. I met through somebody here. They had a connection. But, and Hoda helped me with this. So I went to her last and I said, she's last interview. And I said, Hoda, I need help. I said, I don't want people to leave with the feeling that stalking celebrities is the secret to success. They need to understand. And as Hoda and I said, if you're in the Midwest and the most successful business person in your community is a farmer, then you set up a sit down with that farmer if he or she will talk to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're stalking if they're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really didn't, but I also, people said, well, why do you know this person and this person? I said, nope, if they didn't come through some sort of Naples connection, I didn't do it, because I did want to prove the power of community, the power of referrals. You know, a lot of the people that I had, you know, you really, even I went from Phil Buth from Good Morning America to Tyler Matheson, who introduced me obviously to his wife, Joanne LaMarca Matheson, who was the producer for Hoda and Kathy Lee, who introduced me to Hoda.
That's
so
cool.
Wow. You know, you kind of go down the path to these people. And when they're willing to open, I'm still going to call it their Rolodex, and make those introductions, that's when I know that I've done it right.
Yeah.
I think Rolodex stands the test of time.
I use it every now and then. And every now and then I'll look at a millennial looking with me with crossed eyes.
Yeah, it's like, a little bunch of cards. It's they're cards.
In my LinkedIn workshops with millennials, I have to explain what show a picture on a slide of what a Rolodex looked like.
Harvey McKay wrote a book on Rolodex, and it's probably timed out, but the principles that are in there are timeless.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell us where we get more Randall. Where do we get your book? How do we listen to your new podcast?
Yeah.
Give us details.
How do we go to Amazon.com and look your book up?
Well, you can, but I will tell you the simplest, easy way, and I love the visitors, go to RandallKennethJones.com. I mean, it really is. I've got a really simple site. I'm a less is more kind of guy. It shows examples of me on stage as a speaker. You can buy the book from the site. And I actually am a consultant, and I write and create and work with companies as well. And it's all there. So just RandallKennethJones.com is a one-stop shop.
On Sell or Die, subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die.
And follow us on Twitter. I'm at Gittimer. On Facebook, I'm /Jeffrey Gittimer.
I'm at Jen in a New York Minute.
You follow me, you follow Jen. We tweet it, we Facebook it, you click it, you join it.
Thanks to our amazing guest today. Our producer is Doug Branson, and our technical director is Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.